This is a weekly podcast about growing, designing, and selling flowers, and I'm your host, Sarah Nayani. I'm a gardener and a floral designer in Seattle, Washington, in the United States, and I started this podcast to share my love of flowers and everything I'm learning as I'm building a small business called Grow Girl Seattle. This is season 2, episode 10, and our season 2 finale. And on today's episode, I have a lovely surprise for you. A few months ago, as just like a total long shot, I reached out to my favorite floral designer, Yasmin May, to see if she'd join the podcast, not thinking I'd ever hear back. And let this be a lesson to all to reach out to your heroes, because not only did Yasmin respond, but we were able to have a wonderful conversation, and I can't wait to share it with all of you. Before we get to today's interview, a couple updates from over here. It is September already. I'm not sure how that happened so quickly, but I can definitely tell there's a little bit of fall chill creeping in the mornings, and it's not as light out when I wake up, and then it's getting dark out earlier. Definitely the days are shortening up and just a little bit of that fall air going around, but in the afternoons it's still nice and warm, so plants like zinnias and dahlias, sunflowers, and my last succession of basil over here. I'm sitting at my desk looking out the window at my garden to remember what I'm growing right now. those things are all doing pretty well in the heat still, so that's great. So this time of year is really fun for collecting seeds. I've been collecting Iceland poppies, foxgloves, scabiosa, and a few other types of seeds where I just left the plant to kind of dry out in my garden. Things like foxgloves were really blooming about a month or more ago, and I left a few really nice flowering stalks just to dry out and collect seeds from, and those are ready now. And so you can kind of tell because the whole plant will kind of dry out and turn brown, and then you can just go clip that plant and turn it upside down and all the seeds will fall out. It's pretty crazy if you think about like how many foxglove seeds you can get just from one plant. And so it kind of makes sense why certain plants are really good self-seeders. But I like to collect them and then plant them now as hardy annuals so that they'll be really vigorous and strong over the winter, growing their root system, and really nice, big, healthy plants in the spring. And then in addition to the seeds I've collected, I also just sowed some campanula and a couple new varieties of snapdragons, some different colors. I'm not the hugest fan of like the Costa and Potomac varieties for designing because I find that the snapdragon shape is, I don't know, just really not as delicate or intricate as some of the Chantilly and Madame Butterfly varieties. I love the frills on those, and some people don't even know that they're snapdragons, and they both have a really lovely fragrance. So those are my favorite kinds, and I found some new colors this year that I'm really excited to try. So I just started those seeds today, and I got some really cool trays from Bootstrap Farmer, and this is not an ad or at all sponsored. I just like their really sturdy seed trays that they have, because some of the kinds that I have had for the past 3 years are like the little cheapies, like the plastic, black plastic, and you rip the little 6-cell trays apart, and they're pretty flimsy. I wash them out, but it takes a lot of effort. I've had them for 3 years, and a lot of them have little holes or they'll break down the side, and you can't really use it at that point. And so I decided to upgrade all of my seed starting trays. So a couple weeks ago, I ordered some from Bootstrap Farmers. They're the really heavy duty, durable plastic that you can reuse. And I'm hoping if from my cheapies I got 3 years out of those, that from these I'll hopefully get 6, 7, 8 years out of these. So I'm really excited, and just, yeah, I got them in all different colors, which is really fun. So I think that made me more excited to get out there and get sowing today. But hardy annuals are flowers that you can plant the seeds in the fall, and a little baby plant will start growing. And those little seedlings are actually strong enough to make it through the winter. They work on their root system, and then they throw up a big, beautiful flower in the spring. And a lot of the plants that are in this category will fill in some really crucial times in the garden. So they're a really wonderful group of plants to grow. And one resource I love for growing hardy annuals and other cool flowers is Lisa Mason Ziegler's book, Cool Flowers. And then Florette also has some really good online guides on her blog about growing hardy annuals. In addition to the ones that I mentioned before, a few others are larkspur and delphinium, nigella, bachelor buttons, dill and ami, pansies and sweet peas. And Bells of Ireland as well. I actually grew Bells of Ireland this year, and apparently they're really good at self-seeding, and I've noticed all these little baby seedlings growing under where I planted in my zinnias right after the Bells of Ireland wrapped up. And so I've got all these little seedlings just naturally coming up underneath the zinnias, and I'm thinking about transplanting those elsewhere to try to survive over the winter and hopefully have some big, beautiful bells next year. And if you've grown sweet peas, you've probably noticed the same thing, where if you let the seed pods dry out on the plant, the little seed pod will kind of twist open and some of the seeds will fall out into the dirt. And those are really good at self-seeding. This time last year and this year, I've seen a couple little baby sweet pea seedlings growing up. So you can just keep those and transplant them somewhere else or keep them where they're at. But it's really cool to just, you know, have these flowers that just want to grow on their own. For me, this is a really important time to think about what I do want to grow for next year and what varieties I really use in my floral designs and which ones I find that I'm growing and either just kind of saving for myself. Like, I have some roses that I really didn't want to cut on the first couple years, and obviously peonies for the first few years you're not going to cut off of. But I really like to think about what plants I have in my garden that I'm using for floral design and really excited about, and then also what I don't have in my garden that is hard to get elsewhere. And so I've really been looking back on the year and thinking about some of my favorite arrangements and designs that I've made and what were the ingredients in those, how many of those ingredients did I source from my own garden, how many did I buy in. And am I using the space that I have here in my garden to grow things that I can just find and buy easily and in great quality? Or is there something I could grow myself that would be a better use of space that's hard for me to find at the floral market or buy in from other friends? And so some things that I noticed that I have a hard time finding are foliage. I am very picky about foliage if I use it. And I love things that are really fun and cool, like apples of Peru and sort of fun pods, delicate, cool shapes. I just use hops that I bought in from Hops Gadget this week. And those are just such a cool vining shape. I love the texture of those. So I don't know if I'm going to grow hops, but I'm just starting to think about what are some of the foliages that I'm having a hard time getting my hands on, or that I can't consistently get in good quality, and can I grow that myself, and does it make sense to grow that here? And then also some of the flowers, like I can pretty consistently get dahlias at the market, but which ones or which colors can't I get? And things like zinnias, I'm pretty good at growing, but my friend Margaret is pretty great at growing. And so depending on her availability for next year, should I plan to scale back on the beds that I'm using for zinnias and just buy in directly from her? I find those are ones that I actually don't get as great of quality at the market. Like, I'll buy a bunch of 10 and really only be able to use about 7 because either they've passed or like the little heads have snapped on zinnias. And so just trying to think about what I'm wanting and looking for next year, what things were really successful, what things weren't. And I know I'm not the best at planning out every single bed, what's going to go there. I think for me, a lot of it depends on timing and just things that you can't predict with the weather. And so I just try to sow seeds for things that I know I'm going to really want, whether they're hardy annuals or whether that means I'm planning to sow them in the spring for next summer. I am just trying to think about that a lot, and then also make room for things like tulips and other bulbs like fritillaria and crocus and all sorts of things that I ordered in, you know, back in the spring. And now I'm like, where am I going to put those when those orders arrive? So the other thing I'm doing is planting some cover crops in my beds and just trying to think about what's in each bed now, where are the bulbs going to go when they arrive. And I'm definitely making more of my beds into perennial beds because I just find that there are some really cool foliage and flowers, things like mock orange and irises that I just love using in floral design, and I have a hard time sourcing. So I'm just making more space to grow those myself. And I find, at least for me, perennials to be somewhat easier to grow because they, you know, kind of stay alive and they come back. And so it doesn't take as much like seed sowing and tray movement and sort of like potting things up. I'm starting to treat dahlias more like perennials. And so just trying to make things a little easier for myself in the garden so that I can actually feasibly do floral design from the things in my garden and supplement that with beautiful things that I get in from my flower friends and other local growers and farms. So that's what's going on the kind of garden side of my brain and business. And over on the floral design side, I was super lucky last weekend to get the opportunity to freelance for Courtney from Iris and Fig, which is a local floral design company. I love Courtney's style. She does these fantastic, huge, beautiful weddings, and she does installations. I got to work on an archway with her, and so she guided us through, you know, how she wanted it to look, and she used agro wool, which was really nice. I haven't done a ton of installations yet. I've done a few, but I hadn't had the opportunity to work with agro wool yet. I've used Ocean pouches before, and those were really great, and some other sustainable materials, but it was cool to work with agro wool. I really liked it. And anyway, Courtney sort of had this shape that she was looking for with sort of two base panels and then up at the top on the left, some flowers that were going out and over. So it was really beautiful, and I loved the way that she created the shape and the way that she sort of had the different flowers grouped and where each flower had its own space. And she also used some really lovely greenery that just gave it like a flowy, natural look. So I learned so much and just wanted to mention that because if anyone else is newer to the floral design world like I am, it's a really great way to learn and just to meet other people. There was another freelancer there, Aziza, that was working for Courtney, and I got to meet her and chat with her. We just really hit it off while we were working on the base of the archway, and we're going to get together later this month for coffee just because we both love flowers, and it's like so nice to meet people who are into the same thing. And so I had a really wonderful experience, and as we were walking out and the bride and the bridal party and the groom and groomsmen were all kind of in the area taking photos, we were kind of standing back and looking out over this beautiful wedding venue and the guests that were starting to gather. And Courtney was like, you'll be able to do this someday. And it was just nice to talk to her because I'm a little bit scared of weddings. The weddings that I've done so far have been for the coolest brides ever who are very relaxed, excited about local flowers, have like a color palette in mind, but aren't, you know, gonna flip out if one flower isn't within that. And our personalities have really meshed, but I've been a little scared to dig any deeper into the wedding world just because, I don't know, brides kind of scare me. Not just brides, but just weddings kind of scare me because I think that there's so much pressure. It's such a big day. It's so expensive. There's so many expectations that, you know, and often weddings are outside and it's hard to have flowers survive in the heat, and you have to really know which ones hold up well. So I've been more geared towards like the personal flowers, boutonnieres, bouquets, centerpieces for tables, things like that. But I haven't done, you know, these big weddings yet. But anyway, it was really nice to speak with Courtney and just get her perspective on kind of how she handles that pressure and that stress. And she just was really wonderful. So I just want to say thank you. And for anyone who wants to check out her gorgeous work, you can go follow along at Iris and Fig. For the Flower Friends flower fact this week, we're going to dive into mushrooms in honor of Yasmin. And if you listen to the interview in just a minute, you'll see why. She loves them. But so here's the question. What are mushrooms? How do they grow? Why might you see them in your garden? And can you name a few varieties of mushrooms? So that's a lot of mushroom questions, but we'll go from there and listen in to the interview with Yasmin and then the answer to the flower fact question at the end of the episode. All right. Well, our listeners are going to be thrilled today because we have Yasmin May from Yasmin Floral Design joining. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about where you're located and a little about your business?
So my name is Yasmin, as you just stated. And my business, Yasmin Floral Design, is located in Los Angeles in Atwater Village, which is a neighborhood here. And I've been a florist. Well, I've been working with flowers since 2004, the end of 2004.
Wow.
And I started my business, I don't actually recall, because I was already doing events through word of mouth right after I stopped working at a flower shop. I think in 2009. So I want to say maybe that's around the time I started my business.
Wow. So it's been almost 13 years in business. That's amazing.
It has been. Let's just say concretely 10 years. Okay. I've been working for myself since 2009.
Wow. Okay. And is that how you got into floral design, from working at a shop?
Yes. When I was 18, I got a job at a flower stand on Pacific Coast Highway in Laguna Beach. And a couple of years earlier, when I was 15, I applied for a job at a flower shop, not at a stand, also on Pacific Coast Highway in Laguna Beach. And because I've always loved flowers. And when I went to apply, the people working at the flower shop politely declined.
Oh no.
I mean, I was 15. I couldn't even drive to the shop. So plus my parents were very strict with me not getting a job while I was in high school, because I think they were worried that that would make me not want to go to college. Jokes on them, because I never got my degree. But anyway, once I graduated high school, they allowed me to get a job. And yeah, I got a job at a flower shop, and that was that.
So you knew you were drawn to flowers and then started working right in them.
Yeah, I feel pretty lucky. To briefly touch on my college experience, I was never an academic. I think I did very well in school when I was younger, and there was a lot of pressure from my parents to be something, not a florist. And so I think I denied my real, I don't want to say calling, because that makes it sound much bigger and more important than I think it really is, but I denied what I really wanted to do with my life for a while, thinking, sure, I could become a professor. I wanted to become a professor, or my parents really wanted me to become a professor of political science. And then I switched to studying art history, because that was more in line with what I was interested in. So when I decided to drop out of school to pursue floral design, my parents were really dismayed. And my brother is a lawyer, and they kept comparing me to him until they realized that, you know, until they realized their daughter could make a living for herself in this career.
Yeah. So, they wanted the best for you and didn't see that as a route, maybe.
Exactly. So I was always drawn to it, but I kind of denied that for a while because I also thought it was kind of a frivolous job, to be frank. I don't feel that way now. I do have a lot of issues with the floral world, mostly in terms of sustainability.
Yeah.
And in that way, it does feel very frivolous, but yeah, I've always been drawn to flowers.
So did you teach yourself, or how did you learn how to do flowers?
So at the flower shop that I worked at, it was a bucket shop. So it is really adorable. It's still open. It's called Brown's Flowers in Laguna Beach. They're lovely. But that job, although the floral selection is not necessarily what I use now, it afforded me a lot of space to play because most of the time I worked there, I worked alone. And when there would be moments of no customers, I would just design. And I feel very, very grateful to the owners of the shop for being cool with their employees just making whatever, even though sometimes it was truly ugly. I'm sure if I had photographed many of the arrangements that I made, I would be horrified. But I think play is so important, and really making something that you're not committed to selling, I just like trying to hone in your craft. So yes, I did learn a bit from my coworkers when I was working with other people. I do remember also that the owners of the shop hired somebody to teach us how to make bouquets, wrapped bouquets, but they were very much in the style of like a Trader Joe's bouquet. So stylistically different, I would say, than what I was trying to do, but still it's good to learn some basics. We didn't use any chicken wire or anything like that. It was like a floral foam base, which is not something that I use anymore. And learning the mechanics of making boutonnieres and lays and things that I don't really make much of anymore, but it's still good knowledge.
Well, how has your design style evolved over time? How would you describe it now?
So I would say that I think that I'm better at composition than I was, but I'm also somebody who doesn't change all that much, unfortunately. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but I basically dress the same as I used to, like, to go, and my hair is the same length. The flowers that I gravitate toward are more or less the same. So I would say that I've become, I hope, much better at composition. And I think that some of my flower selections have changed. When I'm happy with the work that I create, it's usually pretty whimsical, kind of romantic, but there's something about it that's a little edgy. And yeah, I don't know that I'm articulating that as well as I would like to, but I think my floral work looks a lot better than it did 10 years ago.
And so what are some of your favorite, I think I know some of these from following along, but what are a few of your favorite flowers or other ingredients to work with that really inspire you?
So this is one of the ways in which I feel that I'm pretty predictable. I'll give you a very quick anecdote. My partner and I have been engaged for almost 2 years, and we've been putting off getting married because we're very much people who, we have like fluid schedules. We're very like still people who just want to do things when it feels right. And so we just agreed that we are going to elope in late May. And that's because I really want Buddleia globosa in my bridal bouquet.
Ooh.
And that is a type of butterfly bush that I really love. That's in a lot of my designs. But you actually would probably be able to grow quite well, I would imagine, in Seattle, because it grows very well. And in Oregon, I think Washington would probably be good. Ooh. But my partner is an urban gardener, and he planted a couple of these beautiful Buddleia in his garden, and they didn't flower. And I think it's because they didn't get enough chill hours. So I'm going to be putting ice on them, hoping that helps give them some chill hours during the winter months.
I love that.
They just make me so happy. They're just happy flowers to me. They're very whimsical. So anyway, hoping to be able to encourage that plant to bloom so that I can make my bridal bouquet from his garden. But that's definitely one of my favorites.
Well, congratulations on your upcoming elopement.
Thank you.
It kind of falls in line when people want to get married at the time. Especially if you're a floral designer, you want to get married at the time that your favorites are available.
Oh yeah. I know it probably sounds pretty silly, but I just really want that in my bouquet.
Yeah.
I mean, since I'm not planning on having a wedding, I just want one special floral moment.
Yes. And you mentioned that your partner has an urban garden. Do they grow flowers for, you know, for your business or for just your enjoyment or anything in the urban garden?
So no, mostly no. he indulges me sometimes and will plant, like he's growing a very beautiful hollyhock right now, so that I can use it in my designs. I think hollyhock is pretty tricky because it does wilt quite easily. I haven't had the best luck with burning the ends to help with longevity in a vase, but he does grow some things for me, but I think they're really for the bees. Like, he knows that I love poppies, so he plants a ton. Right now, something that he definitely did grow for my arrangements is dreadlock amaranth, but he's primarily a vegetable gardener. That's really what he derives the most joy from. And he's not really keen on sharing too much garden space for flowers.
That's fair.
But he keeps bees now, so he needs the flowers. So yeah.
Is that where you get many of the tomatoes that you share on your account?
Yes. Yes. He grows a lot of, a lot of unusual varieties of vegetables, several different kinds of tomatoes. And yeah, those do make their way into my arrangements. So yeah, I guess now that you mentioned it, he did grow those tomatoes for me so I can use them in arrangements and also so we can eat them. So yeah, I guess so.
Once in a while, you'll get a little bonus. Well, where do you source the majority of your flowers?
So I source almost all my flowers from the flower market in downtown Los Angeles. It is a mix of local and imported. I wish that it were possible to do only local flowers. In certain parts of the year, it's easier, but I think that I'm guilty of this, and I think other florists can probably relate to this, but when it is fall and I start getting kind of tired of the local flowers, I will sometimes buy flowers from the Southern Hemisphere, so mostly from Chile, New Zealand. And those flowers traveled a long way to, best case scenario, live in someone's home for a week. Worst case scenario, for an event, you know, they're pretty for an event for one day and then they get tossed, which I hate. So at the flower market, there are a handful of vendors that I go to regularly. I'd say the four that I go to the most often are Well, three of them are import and local, but mostly import, sadly. And one of them is local only. But I also do visit farms. That is a pastime of mine. And we're lucky in Southern California to have a lot of really wonderful farms that grow beautiful flowers. And some of them grow flowers and vegetables and fruits. So it's a mix, but most of the time, 80% of the flowers that I use are from the flower market.
That's great. Well, what are some of the farms that you like to visit in your area, or I guess in the Pacific Northwest? I've seen a few too.
So when it's spring, I like to go to Kilcoyne, which is in Acton, California. It's about an hour away from me. Kilcoyne is primarily a lilac farm, but they grow incredible lilac. They have over 100 varieties of lilac, if you can imagine.
Oh my God. I didn't even know, honestly, that there were 100 varieties. That's amazing.
I did not know that either. And again, it's over 100 because, I mean, I don't want to give a number that's higher than what it is, but I feel comfortable saying that it's over 100 because I think it was 120 varieties.
Wow.
Anyway, it's really a special place, but they also grow bearded iris.
Beautiful.
I love. So when it's spring, I like to go there and buy lilacs and then irises, and they also grow roses. So Southern California florist, that's definitely a place to check out.
Your car must smell so good on the way back from that and your house.
Oh, it does. Yes, absolutely. I mean, which is a nice contrast to how my car often smells, which is slightly of mildew, because I'm sure a lot of florists can relate to this, but with deliveries, water spills almost every time.
So much water spillage.
Yes.
It's impossible to get out too, and especially where you live where it's hot, it's like hard, it's hard to avoid.
I know. Well, what's so funny is that there was one day a couple of months ago where I spilled a good amount of water, so I decided it's hot out, I'm gonna air out my car. I put the windows down and there was a random rainstorm. It was perfect. Definitely made it worse. I mean, it happened at night. Otherwise, I would have rolled up my windows. But yes, it was very funny.
Yeah. At least you work professionally in flowers, so you get the good smells sometimes.
That's true. But yes, to your point, driving back from Kilcoyne, my car smells amazing. But yeah, Kilcoyne is wonderful. There is a Protea farm in San Diego, in a place called Fallbrook, called Resendez Brothers, and they grow such an incredible variety of Protea, which is something, and Grevillea. And I do use quite a bit of South African and Australian flowers in my work. Mostly one particular pincushion variety called Brandy de la Cruz is one of the things that makes me the happiest when I see it at the market, but that's where I sometimes get that once I grow it. Yeah, and to answer your question of other things that I use in my arrangements, one of the things that I love using, that I've loved for truly my whole life, it's something that's not in the plant world, and that just makes me equally happy, mushrooms. I even have a hard time articulating how much I love mushrooms. I love them. They bring me so much joy.
How did you start working with them?
Well, I think I started playing around with them when I worked at a different flower stand in Laguna Beach, that was owned by one of my friends. And I was, I think, 22 when I went to work for her. And she was and is the best. She no longer owns a flower shop, my friend's Caitlin, but she allowed me also the space to create basically whatever I wanted. Every Saturday, I would work for her one day a week because this is when my parents were like, you need to be serious about your schooling. No more flower nonsense. So this was my one day a week job. And I would work alone. And I asked her if every week I could have a different theme in the window. And she was really just really open to anything I wanted to do. So one day I would have everything yellow in the display, flowers. And there was one day where I decided I wanted kind of a winter wonderland of sorts.
Ooh.
And it was more of a California winter, I guess. I grew up going to Mendocino, which is in Northern California, almost every summer. And my best friend actually lives there now. And winter is their mushroom season. And so that kind of inspired this window, which was, which had a lot of pine cones and mushrooms. And honestly, because I think she carried flocked stuff, probably some flocked things, which I don't use. But I think that was, that's when it started. That was maybe, I mean, I would make little posies and stuff when I was a child, like any child does. And I would always gravitate toward the mushrooms that would pop up in the lawn, which were not very beautiful. But anyway, I think that's the first time I remember composing something with mushrooms. And then I would play around with them. I also really enjoy foraging. So things that I'm inspired by, if it's a natural thing, like even the food that I'm eating, it so often makes its way into my arrangements. So mushrooms, I felt like they belonged in my work.
What are some of the creations you've made recently with mushrooms?
So I just did a job last week for a mushroom company called Smallhold. They had a launch party for their new Los Angeles farm. And I made a few compositions using their mushroom blocks. So basically, the mushrooms were coming out of the substrate that they grow from. And then I added some other mushrooms and some dahlias that were locally grown. And something else that I use a lot in my work, clematis seed heads, or clematis. How do you pronounce it? You say clematis or clematis?
I say clematis.
I don't know if it's like a West Coast pronunciation or if it's an American pronunciation, but I say clematis, but so many of my friends say clematis.
Yes, so, me too. Anyway. I've heard it both ways. I feel like it's a little more British to be like clematis, you know?
I think that is the British. Yeah, exactly. But yes, I use clematis seed heads. I pair them very often with mushrooms because the question that I get asked by florists a lot is, how do you use mushrooms without them getting waterlogged? Which is a fair question. But I'm also thinking, I don't know how the mushrooms would ever make their way to water. But basically, it's nice to use them with something dry because then you don't have to worry about them getting damaged from the water. Mushrooms are sponge-like, and so they really absorb moisture. So if you were to use them in like a centerpiece, you would never want to stick them in water. I think sometimes people think that that's a way to keep them fresh, but that's really going to make them look pretty soggy. So I like to use mushrooms often with dried material because then I don't have to worry about them being exposed to any moisture. But yeah, that was the last mushroom creation I made, and that was really fun. And I have used them in bridal bouquets. I've made quite a few mushroom boutonnieres. Even though I tend to shy away from weddings, I do love making bridal bouquets for elopements.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've made a lot of mushroom arrangements for photo shoots.
I saw those rings that you made. They were so beautiful with like the little globe.
Oh, that's right.
Those are cool.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Those are so fun to make. So with those, I grow the mushrooms because I'm particular about how large they are, I guess, or how small they are. I want the mushrooms usually when they're at their tiniest, or when they're smaller than they would normally be harvested, because understandably, mushroom farms are going to want to sell mushrooms that are bigger, because they'll get more money from them. And I usually want them a little smaller because they hold better when they dry. They look better, and also the teeny tiny ones just kill me. They make me so happy.
They're so
And
cute.
they're so cute. And so, and that's something that I can't get. I mean, I've never successfully ordered mushrooms from a farm and gotten them that small. So I grow them, which is fun. And it actually makes it sound like I've done anything. I can't take any credit for growing them. There are kits that you can buy that you basically just add water to. And it's also so magical to watch them grow because they grow so fast.
Wow.
Yeah, if like one morning I'll have tiny pins, by evening they'll be about the size that I want them for, the rings.
Wow, that is fast. Oh my gosh.
It's very, very fast. It's so cool. So yeah, so with those mushroom rings, I grew all those mushrooms and then I air dried them, and it's pretty dry here in Southern California, so that's an option for me. I think where you are, it would be a little trickier because again, they don't do very well with moisture. So with those rings, they're sealed off pretty well because they are in that glass dome. But I make a lot of mushroom wreaths for holidays. And those do fine in Southern California indoors, but I think in areas with more precipitation, they probably would get foggy.
Yeah, I like dehydrated some grapefruit for wreaths this past year.
Yes, same thing.
It's so beautiful, but it like some of them fell off the one on my house because they rehydrate just from the air here in Seattle.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I remember I also use citrus in wreaths, and we had one winter that was pretty wet for Southern California standards, and all of my dehydrated citrus rehydrated to some degree, and it was like,
Oh, no.
yeah, sticky. It became sticky. That's another thing that I do, though, to touch on the rings. I make a lot of mushroom globes, domes. I don't really know what they're called. I
Ooh.
call them mushroom worlds.
Yeah.
They have dried mushrooms, dried moss, and usually Clematis seed heads because they're very whimsical. And I have, that's something that I have a really hard time shipping. It's a question that I get asked a lot. I don't really ship any of my creations. I don't know if this is a question people ask you, but sometimes people will send me an email or leave me a voice message asking me to ship flowers or a mushroom arrangement like across the country. And I always wonder what's going through their head. I'm guessing that they think because there are those delivery, those floral delivery options where where companies send you flowers and then a vase separately, perhaps that's what they're thinking. But anyway, there's nothing that I can ship besides sometimes I can ship like a very sturdy mushroom wreath, a small one, or the mushroom rings I was able to ship.
It's like your precious design, and like each piece is carefully placed, and so it doesn't ship well. I'm not sure what people are thinking either, but they want your stuff all over the country, I think.
Well, I mean, which is always so flattering, and it makes me so happy that people respond to my work. It's really crazy that I or you or anybody can create something that they resonate with, and then it resonates with, you know, people who don't know them. I think it's really cool.
Absolutely. Do you have, besides the ingredients that you're working with, do you have other things that inspire you when you design, like a mood or capturing, I don't know, a story or something that you're wanting to tell through your flowers and your work?
I think the thing that inspires me the most is nature. So being in my partner Horace's garden, I'll get inspired by like looking at, I don't know, the small detail of a flower that he's growing. Or lately I've been really, really inspired by squash flowers. But that's maybe in part because I love yellow. But something that has maybe not translated into my work, but that I found very, very inspiring lately is taking a UV flashlight almost everywhere I go and shining it on plants. And sometimes, sometimes fungi. And it's so cool. I really recommend it. It's so interesting to see the way that pollen, the different colors. In my partner's garden, he was growing three different kinds of foxgloves. And each foxglove, the pollen looks a different color under the UV light.
Wow.
Which I found so bizarre and so cool. And there was one foxglove that was pretty ordinary looking. It was just white and speckled. I think it was one of the Dalmatian varieties. And it its pollen under the UV light was pink, even though it looked white.
Wow.
To the naked eye, which is so cool. And, looking at pincushions under UV light was so magical to me because there were parts of at least the pincushion that I was looking at that were like blue that looked just green otherwise. Without the UV light.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's something that I really enjoyed doing. I also found bioluminescent mushrooms that way. I was visiting my best friend in January when it was mushroom season, or the end of their mushroom season up in Mendocino. And I harvested a bunch of mushrooms from her property. And she has a lot. She lives in the middle of the woods, and there are a lot of animal visitors. Bears, mountain lions occasionally. I know she has bobcats for sure. And then, you know, more innocuous ones like deer and skunks and foxes and stuff. I haven't ever wandered at night, although that would be a good opportunity to see bioluminescent mushrooms maybe. But anyway, I harvested several mushrooms during the day, and I went into a dark corner of one of her rooms and I flashed the UV light on them, and one of them was glowing like this neon green.
Whoa.
Like, I know, it's so cool. So anyway, that's something that's been inspiring me.
I just think that there's so much that we know about plants, but there's still so much that we don't know about plants. And I think so much we can learn from them. And so I find that that's incredible to look at them in a different way and also to gain inspiration from that. I didn't realize that there were bioluminescent mushrooms, and I don't know, I'm picturing like some cool night installation or something that could glow at night with these mushrooms would be beautiful.
Oh, totally. I mean, it was just happenstance that I found these. Like, I really wish I knew the name even. I tried to find out what they were, and that was not very fruitful. There are so many kinds of mushrooms, but yes, I really recommend getting a UV flashlight and just going outside, even staring at something as mundane as a dandelion. I'm sure you'll see something.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to ask with your designs, if you have any like rituals that you do that really like get you in the mood to be creative, or I don't know, things that you always do when you're designing.
I'm actually really curious to hear how other florists respond to this, because I am not, I'm not somebody who has any sort of ritual besides coffee in the morning. And that's not even regular. Like, I have no routine, really. Everything is pretty fluid, which works for me.
Yeah.
But I know it's not for everybody. But no, there isn't anything that I do every single time I arrange. I usually am listening to something, either a podcast, and the podcasts I listen to are usually food or science related, or music. But no, I prefer to arrange early in the day. I'm not really a night person. I tend to go to bed pretty early, like usually before 10, unless I have a crazy event or it's holiday season, whether it be Valentine's, Mother's Day, or the winter holidays. But no, I totally don't have any sort of, well, maybe I should find one though. Well, and something that I get asked sometimes is why do you choose particular things? Like, what made you choose this? Why did you make this arrangement? And I don't have any sort of interesting answer. It's not like, most of the time I don't go to the flower market having anything in particular in mind, unless there's an event where the company, event coordinator, host, whatever, had a specific color palette in mind, or rarely do I ever accept to this, but specific flowers in mind. And I say I rarely say yes to that, because it's so hard to get specific flowers sometimes when a lot of the stuff that I use has like a short window of availability. So basically, when I go to the flower market, I just let the flowers speak to me. Like, and that sounds very cheesy, but I just get, you know, I get inspired by what I see, and
Well, that actually leads me to another question that I should have asked earlier, but for your designs and creations, where are most of them ending up? Are you doing like event work, deliveries, workshops? How are you selling your flowers?
So I do quite a bit of event work. I have a lot of private clients too, whose house flowers I do. That is wonderful, because I love all my clients. It's also one of the reasons why I probably can't leave Los Angeles for a while.
Yes.
So yeah, I would say that's actually probably the bulk of my business right now, is private and events. And I do the occasional delivery, like where I hop off of this call. I have to go make a delivery. But that's not that common. I mean, I probably make no more than 10 deliveries a week. And on average, it's probably like 3 deliveries a week. So that's not really the bulk of my business, because I am very particular. I am kind of a control freak. And it's the reason why my business has stayed so small all these years, because I'm now 36 and I haven't had my business obviously for this long, but I've been working with flowers in some capacity for 18 years, and my business is still extremely small. I have former students of mine who took workshops of mine who have really big, wonderful, beautiful, successful flower businesses. I'm not saying they exclusively took my workshops. I'm sure it took many others, but what I'm saying is that they got into floral design well after I did, and have expanded their businesses in ways that suit them. I If I could make every single arrangement that has my name on it forever, I would, which is not sustainable. It's part of the reason why I don't really do weddings, because I don't like being an arrangement factory pumping out the same design over and over and over. And I find that weddings so often kind of demand that of you. And it's a reason why I've remained pretty small, because I want to make basically everything that has my name on it. And I also want to deliver it, which is why I take very few deliveries per week. It's also why I really can't accommodate very small orders. Sometimes people reach out to me asking for arrangements as small as $75, and that's not really doable. Especially since Los Angeles is so big, and sometimes they want a delivery that's like an hour away. Yeah, so I do flowers for private clients, homes, and events, and delivery sometimes, and the occasional bridal bouquet, because they're so fun to make.
Yeah. Do you find that doing the deliveries for clients' homes gives you like maximum creativity and that you can kind of go with what is inspiring you that week?
Yes.
That's great.
Most of my clients have a lot of faith in me and my work, and so they just let me do whatever I want. Some clients have specific requests for color, usually, but I think that it's my favorite kind of work. Oh, actually, I forgot to mention what my very, very, very favorite kind of work, which is something that I do too, which is photo shoots and commercial shoots. That's something that I love. It's a wonderful part of living in Los Angeles. I love being on set. I love the chaos of sets,
Yeah.
whereas I hate the chaos of weddings. And
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's like equally frantic energy, but because it's not a couple's most important day in the world, like there's something that I feel like I can manage that chaos and energy much, much better. Not that they're comparable, really, but what I'm saying is that they're both extremely stressful. But yes, I love working on set. Another reason why I can't really leave Los Angeles.
Yeah, very unique to your city.
I only say leave Los Angeles because I'd like to be able to afford a home someday.
Yeah.
And LA is very expensive, and my partner and I really want land. And yeah, but I'm happily stuck here for a while.
Do you have any design tips that you could share with new or, florists that are just starting out?
I think the best thing is to just try to be yourself. That sounds really cheesy, but I think something that has really benefited me is just buying, if you have the means. Of course, this is not, flowers are really, really expensive, so I don't know that this is really doable all the time. But if you have the means to buy flowers and whatever product that you're drawn to, and just have time for play, I think that's the best way to find your own style, rather than trying to figure out your style while you're also catering to clients. Because once you develop your own style, then clients will come to you for that style. I find I don't really want to blame apps like Pinterest or companies like Pinterest, but I think that floral design has many, many pockets that are very homogenous. So there's like, there's the very neutral, muted bridal tones. And then there's like kind of the blush and peach bridal pocket. And then there's like the one that I have a really hard time with, which is the spray painted, dyed, pocket.
Oh.
And within all of those design worlds, so much of those designs look the same. And it's because a lot of people, I think, aren't really trying to find their own voice. And probably, I don't really want to blame the florist too much. I'm sure a lot of it is that coordinators are coming to florists who maybe don't have a very clear design eye. And yet, hopefully, and are asking them to replicate the work of somebody else. I don't know if this is something that you've noticed, but it's something that I see a lot. And I also, something that I think is intended to be flattering, but I'm flattered by it, but I'm also kind of off-put by it, is when florists or sometimes event coordinators will reach out to me asking me, they'll send me a photo of an arrangement that's been, you know, reposted on Pinterest many times. And they'll ask, what is this flower? What is this flower working? Where can I get it? Because they want to replicate my design, which is fine. I know it happens. I mean, it happens to so many creatives, not just florists. But I think it's kind of a shame because I think that those florists are really depriving themselves the space to find their own voice. So that would be some advice I would give. Just try to play. You'll find, I think, hopefully, something that feels like your style.
Yeah, I think that's great advice because I agree, especially there's a lot of like, being very new to this, there's a lot of pressure to just book something and, you know, get jobs. And in order to do that, you feel like you have to be something that either you're not yet or haven't had the time or space to like evolve into. And I really like your advice about playing because, to be honest, that's something that I've really just started doing in the past few months is like saving a budget that's just for me to get the flowers that I want. Because at first I was like, well, I'll have clients pay me for this arrangement or this design and I'll figure it out from there. But when you get a lot of specific requests, it's hard to like hone your voice. Totally. So that's so helpful.
For me, it's so important because like I said, if you have time to, I call it play because I think it's fun, but to hone in, you know, your craft and skill and make something that feels like you, then like I mentioned, event coordinators, brides, whoever will reach out to you for your designs rather than reaching out to you asking you to replicate something that somebody else made. And I mean, nothing is fully original. Like a lot of my work looks like a lot of other people's work and like so on. But I still think that I would hope at least that you can look at some of my work without seeing my name and think that's Yasmin's work, you know? And I think that that's something that, I think that that's something that like almost everybody can accomplish.
I wanted to ask if there's anything coming up that you wanted to mention or anything else that you wanted to share that I haven't asked yet.
No, I don't think that there's anything too interesting coming up for me. I mean, I have a lot of events. I feel like I'm already in holiday mode, preparing for at least corresponding with a lot of people about various events starting in October. But no, I'm excited that it's going to be mushroom season soon. Here.
Yeah.
I usually go up to Oregon to visit some of my friends. One of my dear friends, Aaliyah, is a co-owner of a flower shop called Sola Bee in Portland. They have two locations and it's just the sweetest shop. Both shops are super lovely. Have you been?
I love that. I follow along with them. Oh, yeah. I haven't been in yet, but I could definitely follow along.
Both shops are super beautiful. And Aaliyah is a dream. And so is Sarah, the other co-owner. But anyway, I visit Aaliyah and a couple of my other friends who live up there, usually in spring and in fall. And I'm hoping that we get to go chanterelle foraging.
Ooh.
I think that's the thing I'm most excited to do. Yeah.
That sounds very nice.
And maybe I'll bring my UV flashlight.
Yes. Find some more treasures.
Yes.
And before we go, the last thing I wanted to address is the other stars of your Instagram account, your cats.
Oh, my.
Can you tell us about them?
Yes, very happily. So I'm fully that embarrassing person who who will start showing people photos of my cats when they ask me about them. So it's a good thing that you're not in close proximity. I have two cats. They are named Dandelion and Nettle.
Oh.
And they are just constant sources of joy for me. Yeah, and they have silly names because my partner and I are plant obsessed. And we love both nettles and dandelions. We consume both of them a lot. And we also wanted to give them names of something, of plants that were weed-like, in that they would be things that we would encounter all the time. So I feel like I think of both of them all the time because they're named after a somewhat noxious weed. And so I see them everywhere. But yeah, obviously not noxious, but you know, very, very pervasive. But Nettle's name is fitting because she is not the cuddliest, and she has no qualms about using her claws. So
that's a perfect, perfect naming then.
It suits her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I love seeing them on your account and with some of your, I don't know, arrangements or flowers or whatever. They're so cute. So I hope to get more videos.
It's really funny because I'm obsessed with glass gem corn, which is a type of corn, popping corn, that looks like glass and like gems. So the name is very fitting. But my cat Dandelion is also obsessed with glass gem corn and loves to sleep in it, which is really odd. He's always looking for it. And if he hears any crinkling of the corn husk, his ears prick up and then he like looks around, where's the corn? Very cute.
That's adorable. Yeah. Well, I'd love to get some pictures from you of the designs that we talked about today, and then also of your cats.
Yeah,
and just post it when I post this podcast.
Perfect. Will do, happily. I'll send you all the cat photos.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining today, Yasmeen. And it was such a pleasure to speak with you.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
I know I shouldn't need permission, but hearing from Yasmeen, her advice about playing with flowers and developing your own voice and kind of following what makes you happy flower-wise, just really looking for things that just make your heart sing, as cheesy as that sounds. I mean, it's really true. And I've been going through a small crisis lately when it comes to sunflowers because I just grew them because they make me so happy. I love looking at them. I just find them to be the sweetest flower. They come in all these different cool colors and varieties, but one of my favorites is just like the classic Van Gogh, like bright yellow sunflower. And I've just been feeling like I can't use them in my designs because people will think they're tacky and I don't see them in a lot of other people's work that I really admire. But you know what? Sometimes you just gotta follow your heart and use flowers that make your heart happy. And so that was one big takeaway that I took from Yasmeen, not just with sunflowers, but that was just one example of, you know, not comparing ourselves with others as much and just trying to think about what works for you and then having people find you based on what works for them. And so I just really liked hearing that. It really hit home for me. And I've been thinking about that a lot since I talked to Yasmeen. I also loved hearing about her UV flashlight, her love of mushrooms, and also how she looks at her flowers really up close and admires their form and is really inspired by that. I really relate to that, and just it was really cool to hear about, and also just loved hearing how she picks out her flowers and kind of the way that she's maintained her voice and intentionally built her business, where her creations are thoughtful and individual and where she's making everything that has her name on it. So it was really cool to hear more in depth, because a lot of times I feel like with people we follow on Instagram, it's like you're kind of seeing all this beauty, but like not hearing a lot about how that gets made and what the thought process is behind it. So it's a really special insight when we get the chance to do that. And Yasmin told me this was her first podcast. So thank you so much for joining, Yasmin. It means the world to me. And it was such a joy to get to talk to you. And now for the Flower Friends Flower Fact Answers this week. And just to remind you, the questions were, what is a mushroom? How does it grow? Why might you find them in your garden? And what are some types of mushrooms? So I'm going to read the answer to what is a mushroom and how does it grow from this really sweet website of the Canadian Ministry of Forestries. A mushroom is the reproductive structure produced by some fungi. It is somewhat like the fruit of a plant, except that the seeds it produces are in fact millions of microscopic spores that form in the gills or pores underneath the mushroom's cap. The spores blow away into the wind or are spread by other means, such as animal feeding. If they land on a suitable substrate, such as wood or soil, spores will germinate to form a network of microscopic rooting threads, mycelium, which penetrate into their new food source. Unlike the mushroom, which pops up and then passes away quickly, the mycelium persists often for many years, extracting nutrients and sending up its annual crop of mushrooms. Mushrooms are fungi. They belong in a kingdom of their own, separate from plants and animals. Fungi differ from plants and animals in the way that they obtain their nutrients. Generally, plants make their food using the sun's energy, photosynthesis, while animals eat, then internally digest their food. Fungi do neither. Their mycelium grows into or around the food sources, secretes enzymes that digest the food externally, and then mycelium absorbs the digested nutrients. There are exceptions to these generalizations. Some organisms are placed into their respective kingdoms based on characteristics other than their feeding habits. Then for why you might find mushrooms in your garden, I'm going to read this from Backyard Garden Lover, which is a website I found. If you find a significant amount of mushrooms in your garden or lawn, you've likely had some wet, humid weather recently, or perhaps the area is well irrigated. In addition to the moisture, the fungi also probably take advantage of a good source of decaying organic matter, like old root, tree stumps, leaves, or even bark mulch. And that makes sense for me because I find that when I put new compost down, I tend to get some mushrooms, especially underneath other plants where it's dark. And mushrooms like dark and damp conditions. They go on to say that mushroom growth is not bad for your garden. In fact, mushrooms can be beneficial and are often a sign of a healthy lawn or garden. In decomposing organic matter, mushrooms increase the availability of nutrients to plant roots, thus contributing to rich, healthy soil. Think of them kind of like the fungal version of an earthworm. One group of fungi called mycorrhizal fungi, I can say that, actually directly help plants absorb water and nutrients through their root systems, in turn receiving sugars and amino acids. You may remember learning about symbiotic relationships in bio. This is a classic example. Mycorrhiza associated with many trees and shrubs produce visible mushrooms. It's important to note that oaks, pines, and many other trees will grow poorly or not at all without their mycorrhizal partners. It says, when you see mushrooms in your garden, rejoice. They indicate healthy soil and help break down nutrients to feed your plants. And then I won't be able to name all the mushroom varieties, but here are some. Shiitake, morels, porcini, hen of the woods, chanterelle, king trumpet mushroom, oyster mushroom, black trumpet, sweet tooth, lion's mane, lobster mushroom, field mushroom, white beech mushroom, chicken of the woods, giant puffball, cremini, And there's many, many, many more, but that's just a start. Thank you so much for listening in. And if you have a chance, please go rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to this. And if you want to follow along on Flower Friends Podcast Instagram account, you can see all of the new episodes when we release them and then see some photos from some of our guests so you can kind of track what we're talking about while you're listening. We also have the Flower Friends podcast Song of the Week playlist on Spotify, so you can go listen there, and I will sing you out with the Song of the Week, which this week is Rocky Raccoon by the Beatles. So somewhere in the Black Mountain Hills, South Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. One day his woman ran off with another guy, hit young Rocky.